But I thought this evening that as it is your communion service, we're going to be participating in the Lord's Supper in just a short while, that what I would do this evening would be simply to take one verse and look at it, think about it, meditate upon it, chew it over, really just to prepare our hearts to come to the Lord's table and to take the bread and wine and to remember the Lord's death as he has commanded us to do. So the verse I want us to think about is 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 18. Peter's writing to Christians who are scattered through the Roman Empire, and many of them are experiencing trials of different kinds. They're being persecuted, they're suffering for their faith, and he gives them the example of Jesus, who also suffered, and uses that to encourage them. But as he thinks about Jesus and his sufferings, his mind naturally goes to the cross and Jesus' sufferings on the cross. And he says in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 18, "For Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God." And it's that verse I simply want us to think about this evening for a few minutes to prepare our hearts as we come to the Lord's table. For Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. And it's one of the great statements about the death of Jesus and what Jesus' death has achieved for us. And I'm going to just look at the what, the who, and the why that we find in this verse. What did Jesus suffer for? Jesus, you know, suffered death on the cross. Jesus died on the cross for our sins. I mean, Jesus died on the cross, and that reminds us simply of the physical pain which he suffered. You know, crucifixion, one of the Roman authors, Cicero, I think, said that crucifixion was the most cruel death ever devised by man. It was a terrible death to be crucified. It was a slow, painful way to end one's life. And that's the death which Jesus died. I mean, we have brought into our English language the word excruciating in order to describe some intense, terrible, unbearable pain. And that literally means, you know, from the cross. So what did Jesus suffer? He suffered death on the cross. He suffered that painful agony of death on the cross, that physical pain. But that's probably nothing in comparison with the spiritual agony which he suffered. Because we're told, you see, that he died for sins. That's why he died. It wasn't simply that, you know, he'd offended against the Roman authorities and they were taking him and putting him to death as a punishment because he'd offended against them. But he was dying for sins, for our sins. So what he was experiencing on the cross was really the punishment for sin. He was taking the punishment which our sins deserve. And for him, that meant intense spiritual agony. You know, sin is an offense against God. It's not just that we let ourselves down or we hurt other people, but sin is an offense against God. We are all sinners. We all sin in many different ways. We all break God's laws. We don't keep his commandments. And we all deserve his righteous judgment upon us for our sin. But that's what Jesus was suffering on the cross. He was suffering for our sins there. He was taking the punishment which we deserved. And that for him meant experiencing separation from his Father. You know, on the cross he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because he's taking our sins upon himself. This means that the fellowship, the relationship, the intimate, loving relationship which he had enjoyed with his Father throughout all eternity, that he was now conscious that that had been disrupted. Something had come in. Something had severed that relationship as far as he was aware. And we can't begin to imagine what that must have meant for him. The Father turns his face away. So this is what Jesus was suffering on the cross. He was suffering the physical pain of death in an excruciating manner, but he was also suffering this spiritual agony of seemingly being abandoned by his Father in heaven. We may not know, we cannot tell what pains he had to bear, but we believe it was for us he hung and suffered there. So as we come to the Lord's table this evening, let's just think about what he suffered for us. And notice that Peter goes on, he says, well, he was put to death and he died for sins once for all. You know, he died at one time, one specific time. He died a Friday afternoon, about 3 o'clock, probably the month, probably the end of March, beginning of April, on a hill called Calvary, outside the city of Jerusalem. He died once on that occasion. And his death continues to be effective and significant for all time. You know, he didn't have to do it again. He didn't have to repeat his sacrifice. There was nothing more that needed to be added to it. There was nothing that was left undone. There was nothing incomplete. He died for sins once for all. On the cross, he cries out, "It is finished." That work that he came into this world to do, that work of reconciling sinful men and women to a holy God, that was complete. His sacrifice was sufficient. There's nothing more that we need to do, nothing more that we have to add. We don't have to top up in any way what he did. He has, by his death, achieved for us total and complete forgiveness for all our sins. There's nothing more required. So when we think about this question, well, what did Jesus suffer? We think about, well, we can think about, you know, what he suffered for us. And we can also think about what his suffering achieved for us. But then the verse goes on and we read that Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous. So this is the who. We looked at what Jesus suffered, the physical and spiritual agony. But who did he suffer it for? Well, he suffered it for the unrighteous. You know, he himself is the righteous one. He is the perfect, sinless Son of God. Peter, just a little bit earlier in his letter, back in chapter 2, he quotes from the prophet Isaiah in verse 22, and it says, "He committed no sin, and no deceit was found in his mouth." He was totally sinless. In chapter 1, in verse 19, he says, "We're redeemed with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect." He was a sinless Son of God. He always did his Father's will. He committed no sin. So he is the righteous one, but he's the one who's been punished. And he's taking the punishment for the unrighteous. That's us, that's you and me. This is who he does this for. He does it for the unrighteous. Our sins are transferred to him. You know, he takes our place. He becomes our substitute. A great exchange takes place. You remember how Isaiah puts it in chapter 53, that he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. So he is the righteous one. He doesn't deserve this punishment. And we are the unrighteous. We are the ones who deserve this punishment. But he is the one who dies in our place, bearing shame and scoffing rude, in my place, condemned he stood. So he takes the filthy rags of our unrighteousness, he takes them upon himself, and instead we are clothed now with the robes of his righteousness. This great exchange takes place. Something which we don't deserve at all. So as we come to the Lord's table, we can think again this evening about how undeserving we are of what he has done for us. You know, it's only by grace that we can enter in to this experience of his forgiveness. And then finally, the last little part of the verse says that he did this. Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. You know, why did he do this? Well, in order to bring us to God. And that's the purpose, that's the goal, that's the object, that's the reason behind all of this. That's why he has done this, in order to bring us to God. And sometimes we think, well, he did it so that our sins might be forgiven. And that's true, of course it is. But really, in a sense, that's only the start. You might say, well, he did this so that we don't have to take the punishment ourselves. And yes, that's true. But again, that's only part of it. There's something bigger, actually. There's something greater. There's something even more wonderful than knowing that our sins are forgiven and that we have nothing to fear in the day of judgment. The bigger thing, the greater thing, the more wonderful thing is that we're brought into a personal relationship with God himself. That those who trust in Jesus and what he has done on the cross and take that and appropriate it for themselves, those who do that are brought into a personal, living, loving relationship with God himself. So that we don't have to fear God as our judge, but we can approach him now as our Father. our Father in heaven, who loves us and cares for us, provides for us, leads us, protects us, who's promised never to leave us nor forsake us, that he'll be with us always. We're brought into this relationship with him. That's why Jesus has done this. You know, in the Old Testament, when the people of Israel went up to worship in the temple, they couldn't just go straight into the temple. The temple symbolized God's dwelling place among them. But they had to bring a sacrifice, and they had to get a priest to, and there was only so far they could come, and then they could go no further. There were these barriers always in place. You know, it's sometimes like visiting some kind of stately home or national trust property, and as you're walking around the big house, you'll see sometimes little signs up, you know, no entry, no admittance, you know, private, you know, keep out. There are places that you can't go, you can't get right in. You can't get right into the center. But Jesus died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring us to God so that we can go right into his presence. We can come with boldness before the throne of grace and know that we'll be welcomed. We can come without any fear because he's our Father and not our judge. So you see, as we come to the Lord's table this evening and we think about, well, what did Jesus suffer? Well, he suffered the pain, the physical pain of being crucified, and he suffered the spiritual agony of being separated from his Father and taking our sins upon himself. So we think about how much he suffered for us. And we think about, you know, how much that has achieved for us. That it was once for all, so that we have total and complete and perfect forgiveness, and there's nothing that we need to do. He's done it all. And then we think about, well, that it was the righteous for the unrighteous. So we're the unrighteous. We're the ones who don't deserve it. We're the ones who were enemies and rebels and disobedient and hostile to him, and he did it for us. So we're thinking about how much he suffered, and we're thinking about how much he achieved, and we're thinking about who he did it for us who are undeserving, and we think about the new relationship which we now have with God as our Father. So, you know, those are some of the things which we can be in our minds now as we come to the Lord's table. Sorry, is that me? These are some of the things we think about as we come. But what effect should that make? Well, what difference should that make? You know, we come to the Lord's table, and you probably come to it week by week, and we do it because, well, Jesus said, this be in remembrance of me. So we're coming to obey this command that he's given to us. But why did he give us this command? For our good. It was for our benefit. So that as we think about his death and our place on the cross, and what he suffered, what he achieved, that he did it for us to bring us into this new relationship. What effect does that have upon us? I mean, surely that should prompt us to thank him, to make us thankful. To make us thankful. We should come with thankful hearts. Surely it should deepen our devotion for him. That he has loved us in this way. If he has loved us in this way, then surely we should respond in love to him. And if he has done these things for us, suffered for us, purchased our complete forgiveness for us who don't deserve it, brought us into this new relationship with God, then surely as well as stimulating our thanksgiving and deepening our devotion, it should renew our determination to go out into the world and live for him, live in obedience to him, live for him each day. So, as we come to the Lord's table this evening, I hope that just thinking about that one verse will help you to appreciate more and more the meaning and the benefits of coming to the Lord's table and taking the bread and the wine and remembering that Christ died for our sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring us to God.